while we're not, I'm not presenting on that, I do want to share some similar research that's been going on. For instance, we've also shown a connection between physical fitness and our academics with some really interesting finding differences between math and science, which I saw on your slides, from reading and writing. And so I would add to that list, we've got to figure out there are different factors going into different subject matters, and to look to see how physical fitness affects them differently would be really interesting. We've also looked at the thresholds and found there's a significant gender difference when you're using the PACER, which is also something we've looked at. And longitudinally, though, if you can change a child's fitness even within a year, you can increase their academic scores. So this area has a lot of potential, and I'm so happy to hear that other states are finding similar things to what we have found. But what we hadn't had a chance to do, that was primarily in our largest school district, or 5-6 county region. We've not looked at physical activity piece of this, nor have we looked at it as a statewide level. So we were kind of at the position of proposing some policy changes, but then principals, Department of Education at the state level, they were wanting a little bit more. If we do this, we want to know how would that affect what we're already doing in the state, and just as mentioned, how does that change our physical education as well as the activity throughout the curriculum? And we didn't know that. So what I'm presenting now is the first phase of a 5-year study that we're doing that starts at this baseline assessment of what is going on physical education-wise, and then if we have that, which I'll get into it, what activities are being embedded within the curriculum of the elementary schools statewide. And then phase two, which hopefully we'll be at next year, to talk about the intervention at a state level based on that baseline. So up there are my colleagues, and background for the systems level or the statewide level work that we're doing basically shows, you know, we know that there are recommendations. We know that states really try, and when I say states, I'm generalizing. I'm going to include West Virginia. West Virginia has really been in the forefront of trying to make change in terms of physical activity and nutrition for our kids. It often comes with an unfunded mandate. And so as a result, you get different outcomes, different reporting, different implementation of that mandate because no money was attached to it, right? So related, though, to that intention, that good intention, is that, and this is across the board, many national organizations have recommended particularly increasing physical activity for our kids, and at various levels, at the elementary school, middle school, and high school. Those differ. And so, let me find that. So despite those recommendations, as I've mentioned, we have a lot of this pressure to really focus on academic scores, which we've already talked about. So that even though you have two competing forces, one loses out a little bit over the academics. All right. So particularly in the West Virginia context, we had like I mentioned, an unfunded mandate enacted in 2015. Now, some of the information that I'm going to present to you is on the cusp of that change, okay? And that's part of what we intended to do as the baseline. So not only to try to evaluate what was happening before this mandate hit, and but also what were the baselines just in general of what was going on across the schools, okay? We wanted to look at the physical education because this mandate not only noted the particular quality and quantity of physical education that should be provided to elementary schools, but it also encouraged, we heard of the brain boosters and a lot of other integrated activities that could be done in the classroom. They've trained all of their elementary school teachers on this. They've, through a physical activity curriculum that they've done on an annual basis in the summer. So, but it's in developmental phase. And certain pieces were plugged in and were not quite there to where they want it. So this is a retrospective study, as I've mentioned, from 2013-2014. only looking at elementary schools, and part of that is because, again, the phase two and three of this five-year grant looks at elementary schools in particular. Okay, a lot of our previous research had looked at third through fifth graders, and so we're just expanding on that. We also didn't want to get into the changing classroom structure that we have in middle school and high school. We wanted to keep as many things constant as possible. All right, so particularly what we looked at here in this phase one is to compare and contrast elementary schools based on whether they met the weekly physical education requirements, which is no less than 90 minutes in this case, okay? The reason why we're emphasizing physical education here and not physical activity first is because in 2013-2014, they simply needed to report, schools were asked to report whether they met these criteria, if they needed an alternate plan to do so, and usually that alternate plan had, it was a large bucket. So if they were doing activities in the classroom, if they needed to do other activities to meet these recommendations, they would put that in there and they would propose that alternate plan, or those that weren't meeting them at all. Okay, now we have a lot of little schools, schools that don't have gyms, schools that don't have trained physical educator, education teachers, and so those were many of the barriers listed why they needed this alternate report or why they weren't meeting physical education, these requirements. The second objective was to explore those schools that said they met the PE requirements. How did they fare on the academic outcomes of their students? Did they, for instance, we might hypothesize that they would have higher mean scores on their academic score, or academic scores overall. Okay, so in this five-year grant, we are working hand-in-hand with our State Department of Education. We have as a co-investigator, their Director of Physical Activity Monitoring. So when this new mandate came in, Josh Grant also was hired to visit all the schools to start really amping up the reporting quality. There wasn't a lot of detail, as I've mentioned. It's very generic. He's developing those. So we have obtained access to the WEBUS data, which is our electronic student database. Okay. So as I mentioned, from 13-14 and the 14-15 academic years. So we had 386 elementary schools that included fifth grade classrooms, and again, our target was fifth grade students, so that's why we set that precedence. Historically, West Virginia has always asked its principals to complete a second month report, which is in October, hence the name. And in that report, that's the report that wasn't that great quality-wise, but in that they were asked to describe their physical education offerings, that need for an alternate plan, and what that looked like. They had to attach it. And then their ability to meet physical education requirements for at least 30 minutes. Of 30 minutes for at least 3 days. Okay, so schools were grouped into those three major categories. We had about slightly over 200 schools in group one, which were the schools that said they met that requirement, that physical education requirement, and they did not need an alternate plan to do so. The second group was about 79 schools, and this is a statewide again, who said that they did meet those recommendations, but they needed an alternate plan. Okay, and then the final group, which was 105 schools, said they did not meet state law or state recommendations for physical education. All right, in terms of our outcomes, all right, we wanted to, the initial comparison of the schools, the elementary schools with the fifth grade classrooms, we looked at total school enrollment, student-teacher ratio, free and reduced lunch percentages, and average family income. This idea is to figure out those who weren't making the physical education requirements versus those that did, or those that needed the alternative plan to do so. Did they look any differently based on their school characteristics to help us understand why they were in that group? To look at the school PE requirement, whether it was met or not, and student academic outcomes, those outcomes were also based on the WEST test, which is our standardized academic or scholastic test. similar categories that you've seen from the other presenters in terms of mathematics, science, social studies, and then our writing is woven into the reading and liberal arts section of this. So we're going to look at the percentage of students who were proficient. And with regard to the West test, what you have, we have different levels. We have mastery, above mastery, and then proficiency. And anything within those three areas on the West test shows that they mastered that subject area. So we combined all three of those areas for a larger proficiency. Since we were looking at the school level, just to try to get the samples enough to compare, so that percentage proficiency includes students who were in those three categories based on that area. Okay, general descriptives about our elementary schools. So here's the breakdown. They vary greatly. You can have from the smallest, including pre-K, up to third grade. Most of them, however, included pre-K to fifth grade. That's the majority of the schools that had that composition. But we do have a very mixed distribution in West Virginia. When we look at the school characteristics with regard to which group they were in terms of their PE requirements, okay, so those who met the requirements without the plan, those who met it with a plan, and those who did not meet it, we saw a difference in terms of enrollment and the student-teacher ratio. And particularly, what this told us, that schools that met the guidelines without an alternative plan had significantly lower average student enrollment. Okay. They also had a lower student-teacher ratio. They did not differ on free and reduced lunch, some of the more socioeconomic characteristics. So, well, we'll talk about that in the discussion a little bit. Groups that did not differ also on the general poverty, when we looked at some of the other rurality, we don't have a lot of metro in West Virginia, but when we look at sub-metro and those other RUCA distinctions, they also didn't vary based on that, distances to schools, things of that sort. So then we wanted to look at whether the schools who met the requirements versus those that did not differed at all based on student outcome. Interestingly, student academic outcomes, at least from this data, this baseline data, did not differ. So you have those particularly large schools that could not meet their PE requirements. Their at least mean math or the percentage of proficiency in math and the language arts didn't differ. That was a surprising result, but we're going to talk about what we think is going on. Okay, so in general, smaller schools are more likely to report having met physical education requirements, particularly with adequate number of teachers, the student-teacher ratio. Okay, but the student academic outcomes did not differ. So why is that? Remember earlier when I first started, I described to you that we were in this phase of changing, that the current reporting that principals are asked to do in that second month report, or an early academic year of October, really was very vague. Did you meet it? What was the alternate report? And then all of these activities that they may or may not have been doing in the classroom were kind of lumped in there. But it wasn't a requirement to report those other activities. Okay. So while we continue to monitor physical activity in other aspects of the school day, at least before it was modified with this mandate, the reporting system didn't require them to list those. Okay. So we could have schools that are put into the did not meet physical education requirements because it will only focused on the phys ed section. Now that it's broadening into what other physical activity is being done during the school day, I would imagine that our three groups, the number of schools in each group, will shift. Okay, that some schools are really, really offering a wide variety of physical activity throughout the day. Some are focusing only on the physical education component, and some will still not do as much. So when we come back next time, it'll be interesting to see whether we might get differences in academics based on how and the measurement of it. Okay. So additional supports of student activities. We know that the size of the school matters here, but we don't know what is being done on the academic side versus the physical education and the physical activity side, this balance that we're talking about. We have since started to assess that in this academic year, okay, as we move past the baseline. We also, while we have the alternative plans that schools submitted, we haven't taken a look at those, but we have those. And again, they vary greatly. There wasn't a lot of auditing, there wasn't a lot of follow-up. If they had an alternate plan attached to that, it was great. And no one checked up afterwards. It's different now. And so how will that change? Assessment tool and reporting bias, we've talked about things related to the standardized academics, as well as the fitness gram. Later on, we also did the fitness gram that we presented elsewhere. So moving forward, when schools are asked to provide more information about physical activity, their fitness, and their efforts, at least in West Virginia, it was very vague and not structured, and there wasn't support to follow it up, and it just languished, even though on the books we have a mandate for that. Now it's changing with all of those resources. So that's one take home. Alternative plans are still accepted in this new system, but the nature of them, there's a particular format to follow, that it has to be approved before they can proceed. You know, all of that might change the quality. We obviously want to compare between the 2013-14 IMP data that we looked at here and the 2015-16 that we're going into for those very reasons. And then we surveyed the principals as part of this five-year study with a lot more detail about the physical activity and do they have trainings for parents as well as their teachers? Do they provide clubs and anything else? So things that aren't included in that second month reporting at the state level, we've added and we've been given the chance to provide or ask a supplemental survey for all principals in all elementary schools throughout the state. So hopefully we'll get additional detail there. So that's it. Thank you. Well, we're not looking at middle schools as a whole at the state level. We're not going to do that yet. We're going to stay to keep things constant. We do, although the insides will be small, we do have some fifth grades because we were focusing on fifth grades. There were some that are nestled within middle schools. But, and we went ahead and looked at those. They're not in this, but we went ahead and looked at those. Because their school, they state they're kind of separated from the rest of the middle school population, and their day, they don't move classrooms like the rest of the middle school. So even though they were physically nestled within the middle school, their day was very similar. But aside from that, we won't look at middle schools yet. So those are mountains that we want to tackle later on. We're having a tough time. Well, not a tough time. They're listening. They being the policymakers at the school and the state level. But it's we feel it's a little bit of an easier argument to start with the elementary schools. And then if they see a few, hopefully if they get some successes from there, then it can be generalized to the middle and the high school. Because absolutely, middle and high school, just the number of days, and even some of our elementary schools are facing that. The larger ones, they rotate. So PE, art, health rotate in 9 weeks throughout. So they're not getting in throughout the year either. And we'll see that in some of that in the elementary schools. But so we're going to do that, but that's further down the road. You're absolutely right though.
Two more questions. Anybody want to go first? Or any of our panelists? Go ahead.
I noticed that there wasn't any control for parental education in the studies that were done, and it might be just the lack of data, but I was wondering if there was any comments about how parental education could affect the findings.
Anybody?
So socioeconomic status is a complex variable, but it almost for our model drives that. So we know it's there, an education piece, paternal education, maternal education, we include in that, as well as the family finances and the school finances. So that's always there. For our phase two, we have a family intervention that will be added on to the school intervention. And so we'll be able to look at barriers, facilitators that come from the parent directly, and one of those is education and how to move beyond that if education's low, which we have a limited educational sample generally.
You actually bring up a really, really good point, because you may have, education may not be the problem, and as you just said, socioeconomic, your socioeconomic status and where you might live, especially for urban students. And what is your availability to infrastructure to actually ease it, to actually safety, and think of things on an ecological perspective. There's a whole lot of things that can influence that. So, yeah, but the more variables you get, the smaller your sample size you get, and it's really hard, so you have to kind of lump stuff together.
Great. Well, thank you for your panel.